The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We've got the big London trip going on for all of the PYC campers today, so it's nice and quiet here around Edstone. I don't have Sam with me today, but I do have Richard in the production pit. And Richard tells me this is the last time I might be in the cellar, so I'm heading to America tomorrow. I'll do a little broadcasting at the headquarters campus next week and part of the week after that. And then when I get back, if all goes well, we'll be moving up in the world, moving all the way up to the attic at Edstone, a brand new radio studio, also some television sets in there, some smaller, compact ones. I think we'll probably still use the TV studio that we've been using, but hopefully, like I've explained before, we'll be able to record some shorter videos up there in addition to the daily radio broadcast. Well, there's lots of newsy bits that I'd like to get to here in just a moment. But as far as the rest of the program, later on in the show, at the end, I'd like to squeeze in, if possible, another world premiere performance. They've been recording song selections for the new musical, or the revised and updated Isaiah musical that's now called Undefeated. And my wife sent me over some clips this morning from some of the recordings that they've been doing this week. So hopefully we can squeeze in some time for a really beautiful song at the end of today's show. Also, for the Bible study, I'd like to focus on focus, the ultimate success focus. You might remember that program from 2016, My Father's Key of David. In fact, he's given two Key of Davids over the years, building around the focus on perfection of Steve Jobs. The first one, I think, back in 2011 or 12, on the subject of perfection. And then the one in 2016, the ultimate success focus, which also became an article at thetrumpet.com. So we'll play some clips from that show and also tie it in with some of the reports that you're seeing today. Like, for instance, the latest on how much American adults spend on their devices or on social media or on media in general. Some shocking statistics. Well, on yesterday's show, I pointed out how that the Bible says we're entering into a dangerous new era, this era of uncertainty and distrust, an era of open hostility and all of this global instability and unrest. We haven't in recent weeks really been talking much about the California fires. We do have an article, Richard tells me, that's coming up pretty soon at thetrumpet.com. But these have been some of the most destructive fires in California's history. I think there's something like 20 active fires going on right now. The biggest one so far in 2008, the Carr Fire, as it's called, C-A-R-R. I think that was ignited just a little over a week ago, 10 days ago or so. And that's just one of dozens of fires raging in the Golden State at this very moment. There's a piece here from CBS that talks about how fast-moving these blazes are, and that as soon as they get one out, another one explodes onto the scene. The new fires, it says, erupted without warning and spread with shocking speed through forest and brush that have literally become tinder. It talks about how that the Yosemite Valley, the national park there, they're closing off these parks. I think it's the longest closure there at Yosemite since 1997. So some historic fires happening in California. I noticed Jerry Brown, by the way, the governor, said that nature is powerful and we're not on the side of nature. Of course, he's a big believer in global warming, or climate change, I guess they call it now. But he said further that since civilization emerged 10,000 years ago, we haven't had this kind of heat condition, and it's going to continue getting worse. And that's the way it is. I mean, it's just going to get worse because of climate change. It shows how deluded some of these officials and politicians are, that God's not even considered. He's not even in the picture. Here they're having this horrible heat wave and all these fires. And really, it's just a cop-out, isn't it, to put the blame on man-made climate change, as they call it. God controls the weather. And over the course of 20, 30 years, my father's given multiple programs on this subject. This one that I have a clip from is from 2009, and this is clip 9.
I wonder if God still has, if he really has a hedge around us, or if there's something very different happening. I think it's something all of us should be concerned about. California has had record heat, low humidity, and the temperature above 100 degrees. Well, God does have control of the weather, but Satan also can have a great impact on the weather if God allows him to, like he did with Job. And he will allow it if there is evil there that needs to be burned out of our people, like the dross is burned out of the gold.
That's a good way of putting it, burning the evil right out of our peoples. And my father, that was in a program from 2009. That's 9 years ago. And it's the same old for California. Another round of these raging fires, destroying forests and houses, threatening the lives of people in the Golden State. It's a state of global instability. You see it with all the weather upsets. There was a story today or yesterday in the Jerusalem Post as well about Israel coming on board, trying to get together this coalition of nations to open up the Bab al-Mandab Strait right there at the mouth of the Red Sea, because the Iranians, through their proxies in Yemen, they're trying to close it. They attacked these two Saudi oil tankers last week, and Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel, he came out yesterday or at the beginning of the week saying that we're going to fight back. And if Iran tries to block this waterway, then it's going to be going up against an international coalition, Prime Minister Netanyahu said. This is from the Jerusalem Post. It says, last Wednesday, Yemen's Iran-aligned Houthis attacked two Saudi tankers sailing through the waterway, with one of the ships suffering minimal damage. It says, a day later, Saudi Arabia announced it was suspending oil shipments through the strait, sending jitters through the world's oil markets. I mean, this was a huge development. Brent Noctegal pointed this out on Tuesday's Watch Jerusalem. A huge story, hardly made any headlines, though. Here's Saudi Arabia pulling out, basically saying we're not going to sail through there because it's too dangerous. Because Iran, they're attacking our ships, our oil tankers. The Jerusalem Post explains just how significant this strait is and how much traffic comes through there every day. It says blocking the waterway would halt shipment of about 4.8 million barrels per day of crude oil and refined petroleum products. So there's another hot spot. Iran is still on the march, still disrupting wherever they can disrupt. The Telegraph, switching gears here again, the Telegraph says we're getting complacent. The sovereign debt crisis is far from over. Everything seems to have settled down. We've talked some on this program about the temporary resurgence in the United States. But as my father's explained before, we can't let that lull us to sleep. The Telegraph says the sovereign debt crisis that gripped the markets from 2010 to 2015 looks to be over. No one is threatened with bankruptcy anymore, and governments are not about to close down as they run out of cash. The trouble is, that is largely an illusion. In truth, every major economy owes far more than it can possibly afford. And when the next downturn comes, that will become painfully apparent. Yes, indeed. What about when the next downturn hits? Downturn? What about when it hits? It's inevitable, this article says. I mean, it always happens. And each time, I mean, we're in a bigger and bigger hole trying to get out of it. It says here, deep into what is now the second longest expansion since records began, we still have debt to GDP ratios that are extraordinary by any historic levels. We'll have virtually no room for fiscal flexibility when the next downturn comes, as it inevitably will. We'll have no, I mean, there's no margin for error anymore. The levels of debt just keep skyrocketing. I forgot to bring it down here with me, but there was another story just the other day about the record debt levels in the United States and the trillions of dollars that they're going to have to be borrowing in the next couple of years. You hear about the United States and its booming economy and record revenue coming in from taxes, but it still can't keep up with spending. Can you believe it? Well, I'm sure you can. That's just been the way of man. That's been the way of politicians. It says, we got through the last sovereign debt crisis, but only just, and at the cost of persuading ourselves not to worry about the next one, when that arrives, it will inevitably be a lot harder to cope with. The next round, the next downturn, that's what's going to trigger the world crisis. That's what Herbert Armstrong said. He said it would be an economic downturn that would bring the 10 kings together. He said it would be an economic downturn that would really trigger all of these last days prophecies, all of these events prophesied to happen just before the return of Jesus Christ. But if your eyes are open, I mean, as I said yesterday, if you're watching and praying always, you're going to be able to see this as it comes on the scene. Richard and I both saw a story this morning in the New York Times. I saw it in my email alert from the Times, and then it came again in his report, this rock band in Germany. The Times story, I don't know if you noticed it, but it actually had a clip of the songs they play. I'll spare you having to listen to this grunge rock from this German band. I guess they're actually from the northern region of Italy in a German area. There in the north of Italy. And in any event, this band, I think their name is Freiwild, they took to the stage at this Alpen Flair, this three-day music festival. And there's something like 20,000 people that have come out to see this band. And most of them are coming from Germany. And the crowd, like the New York Times brings out, they're overwhelmingly white, mostly male, and very nationalistic. Freiwild, or Freiwild, I guess is how you pronounce it. Our German speakers will have to help me on that. But it says here it's become one of the most contentious and successful bands in Germany, where its lyrics about loving one's homeland have resonated with people who want to challenge the post-war taboo against public expressions of national pride. It says the band sings in German, and its music is punk-inflected variant of Deutschrock, a form of German rock music. It says, but a South Tyrolean identity, that would be the Italian community, it allows the group to voice nationalist sentiments in German for a largely German audience, while partly avoiding the backlash that a German band would encounter for making similar statements. So it goes through some of the recent music that it's produced. Its latest album, how popular it is. It's the second best-selling album in Germany, in Germany this past year. I mean, that's pretty amazing. The second most popular. Spiegel just kind of dismissed it, the German news magazine, describing the band as sounding like the soundtrack to the party platform of the AfD. That's the right-wing party, the alternative for Germany party. But I mean, that party is gaining in popularity, as we've noted on this program. And here comes this German band, or this German-speaking band. It's producing the second most popular album this year. Spiegel, as you know, loves to go after President Trump. There's nothing President Trump does that sets well with Spiegel. But here, look at what's happening in Germany, in Italy. Someone just this past weekend gave me, I think it was from the Investor's Business Daily. I couldn't find the article online. But this was following Croatia's run in the World Cup. And it says here, the nationalist tensions spoil Croatia's World Cup party. They made it all the way to the final and then got beat by France. I forget the final score. But then practically 1/8 of the country turned out for the celebration. 500,000 people, that's 12% of Croatia's population, and they lined the streets. I mean, this was a tremendous success, the way that the Croats viewed it. But listen to this story, and here again, this is right close to that same area. Of course, we have a lot to say about the Balkans. You think about that booklet we produced years ago, Germany Conquers the Balkans. I mean, there's some stories here that Spiegel can really focus in on if they wanted to look at some homegrown problems. Germany's responsible for that breakup. Germany was behind it. Germany stood against the whole world. That's what my father covers in that booklet. You go back to the early 1990s and you see what Germany was up to, even against the United Nations, even against the United States, even against the rest of Europe. But they went in there, they get their way in the Balkans, they cause all of that violence and bloodshed. And then now look at this sentiment. The Croats, as it turns out, if you know your history, I mean, they were in alliance with Hitler, with the Nazis. And so 500,000 people turn out. That's 12% of the nation. They're lining the streets. It says here, Croatia's progress to the tournament's final brought popular respite from concerns including pension reforms, the struggling economy, and mass immigration. It says writers abroad focused on how players such as Luka Modric and Mario Mandzukic overcame adversity and displacement during the Balkans conflict in the 1990s. It says, but when a performer called Marko Perković took to the stage in Zagreb and sang the team's unofficial anthem, "You Are Beautiful," that's the English interpretation, as the players locked arms and swayed behind him, happiness for many was cut short. Mr. Perković, nicknamed Thompson after the U.S. submachine gun, is a nationalist musician who has sung in positive terms about Second World War genocide and concentration camps when Croatia was run by fascists allied to the Nazis. So here he is celebrating the concentration camps and genocide. And he's there at the victory party, or at least the run all the way up to the finals for the Croatian soccer team. This singer, it says, became popular as Yugoslavia descended into war in the 1990s. And here again, who caused that? That's some history. That's some recent history that it would be good to go back and review. We've got a booklet, as I say, devoted to that subject. His fame, it says, surged in the early 2000s. Well, the 1990s, his first song that got some notoriety was a song defending his hometown as a soldier. And then his fame surged, it says here, in the early 2000s, partly in reaction to what many Croatians deemed the insult of generals being tried before the International Criminal Tribunal for the former Yugoslavia. It says, finally, he has celebrated former Croatian military officials being tried for war crimes with Second World War-era fascist chants, and his concerts have been banned in cities across Europe, including some in Croatia. It says, finally, Mr. Perković has said he is not a fascist, he's a patriot. And there he is at the World Cup party for Croatia. 500,000 fans. 12% of the country shows up, and this is the man that's out there singing, and everyone cheering along. Croatia, Northern Italy, the AFD in Germany. There's quite a few stories there, and I don't want to just pick on Spiegel. The United States and the things that pass, I mean, even just more focus on the California fires, please. You have the Golden State going up in flames. and reporters thinking that the world revolves around themselves because they're offended that someone is critical of their coverage or that the president would tweet something critical about them. How much do people see in the New Throne of David booklet? I've been going through that just recently. And I forget whether it's chapter 5 or 6, the chapter on Jeremiah 1, the first chapter there. And verse 13 in particular, well, on two occasions, God says to Jeremiah, "What do you see? What is it that you see?" Verse 13 in particular, it says, "And the word of the Eternal came unto me the second time, saying, What see you? And I said, I see a seething pot, and the face thereof is toward the north." God asked him, "What do you see?" And the prophet said, "I see a boiling pot. It's the face thereof is toward the north." Do we see the pot boiling in the north, where the king of the north is about to emerge? Just wait until it gets its leader, its strong man. And these kinds of crowds that I just read about here, the German rock band, and then this case here in Croatia, they're going to lend their support to this Daniel 8 man. And we're going to see a new and different Germany that's very much like an old Germany that we thought would never rise again. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send any comments to td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
Herbert W. Armstrong long forecast the arrival of a military superpower in Europe. In a world where European nations can't rely on the United States, one in which they fear Russia and face the constant threat of radical terror, their only hope of survival is to band together. This is what we see happening, and what we see happening was prophesied in your Bible. Request Germany and the Holy Roman Empire to learn about the history of Germany and the Holy Roman Empire and to understand where the events in Europe today are leading. 3,000 years ago, the prophet Daniel explained that at the time of the end, radical Islam would push against Europe. That time is now. We are witnessing the first manifestations of this Islamist push against Europe, and it's leading to a spectacular clash between these two prophesied kings, the King of the North and the King of the South. What does the Bible say about the identity of these two kings? What about the end time? Will everyone be affected by these events? Request our two booklets, The King of the South and Germany and the Holy Roman Empire. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
So the latest study here coming from Quartz.com about the hours that adults, this is from America, the number of hours they spend each day on average consuming media, 11 hours a day. I don't even see how that's possible. 11 hours a day consuming media in some form. That would include TV, DVDs, radio, apps, smartphone, tablet, the internet, video games like we discussed the other day. But this is up from the last quarter. It's up 19 more minutes. I mean, we can't even get a modest decrease. The consumption, the hunger for this, the appetite for media. I mean, when Americans are spending most of their waking hours just watching television or looking at a screen, there's something ruthless that we need to do, as I said on the program a couple weeks ago, to break free from that, to get our focus where it needs to be. there was another item this morning at the Telegraph talking about young people, how that they're just utterly unprepared for university because they have this Google it mentality. They think that, well, if I need to know it, I can always Google it. So they don't think about things. They don't memorize anything. And then they arrive at higher education and they're totally unprepared. The Telegraph said the majority said that students were unable to remember facts and had a Google it mentality. Almost 90% said that students were unable to think and learn independently. And a similar proportion said that students are unable to manage their own time or workloads. See, they just let Google do it for them. Google's their brain. They let Google think for them. We've deceived ourselves into thinking that the information age, the internet age, the Google age, that makes us wiser and more educated. Instead, it's working against us because of the hours and hours that we spend consuming media, mostly entertainment. Well, God says that we've got to have a rule over our spirit. We've got to be able to think and direct our minds in the way that they need to go. The Moffat translation of that proverb says, a man with no control over himself is like a town with broken walls. That control starts with the mind. As I said, my father had that program from a couple of years ago, The Ultimate Success Focus. And he said, this really is the foundational pillar of success, just being able to focus. And of course, he relied upon the example of Steve Jobs. This is clip one from that 2016 program.
Quote, one of Jobs' great strengths was knowing how to focus. Knowing how to focus. He talked about focus, focus, focus just repeatedly. And he focused like a laser, as they often said.
There he is relying upon, I think, Walter Isaacson, who said that one of Steve Jobs' great strengths was just knowing how to focus. And as my father said, that was the key. He went on to explain how that it was focus that saved Apple, this great American company that Europe despises, by the way. But here it is. It's on the verge of being a trillion-dollar company, I read just the other day. And that's largely because of Steve Jobs' focus. That's quite a success when you look at it in terms of, you know, worldly success. Another example we've been using quite a lot recently is Winston Churchill. And you look at that man's incredible productivity as an author, as a politician, as a speechwriter and speaker, as a husband and father, as a gardener, as a bricklayer. I mean, he had a lot of focus. And that's why he was so productive. I mean, we can fool ourselves into thinking, oh, I'm at my desk for 10, 12 hours a day. But if you're spending half the time consuming media, how productive is it? So many of those things are hurting us. They're not helping us. I mean, Google has its place, don't get me wrong. But we can't let Google think for us. This is quoting one of Churchill's secretaries. He said, part of the secret, this is speaking of his productivity, was his phenomenal, fantastic power to concentrate on what he was doing, and he communicated it. You were absolutely part of it, swept into it. I might have given him some memorandum before dinner, 4 or 5 hours before. Now he would walk up and down dictating. My facts were there, Deacon said. My facts were there. But he had seen it in deeper perspective. I mean, he took the facts, the research that was given to him. His Google was all those secretaries, and they gave him the facts. But then he found the deeper perspective because of his focus and meditation. His routine, I mean, he was really ruthless with that as well. It had to be just so when he was at Chartwell. He didn't like distractions. He didn't like people whistling down the hall. He didn't want anything to destroy his train of thought. William Manchester said about his odd daily schedule. He said his bizarre daily schedule deceives visitors who think it disorderly. He was totally organized, almost like a clock. His routine was almost dictatorial. He set himself a ruthless timetable every day and would get very agitated, even cross, if it was broken. As I say, a couple weeks ago, we talked about making the ruthless break from all of these unnecessary and boring activities. And then how about following that up by setting up a ruthless timetable? Someone else said about Churchill that when his mind was occupied with a particular problem, however detailed, it focused upon it relentlessly. Nobody could turn him aside. That commentator called it the fury of Churchill's concentration. The fury of his concentration. Manchester says that he prowled his study night after night, an inner shutter drawn in the private blackout of the mind, excluding everything but the topic before him. You talk about focus. Together with preparation, no wonder he churned out so many books, so many articles, so many speeches. This was not an ordinary man. This was a genius because of his focus and because of his willingness to study, his ability to concentrate. He had it. He had this ability, and Steve Jobs had it in another way. Let's look at Matthew chapter 5. Look at a memory verse at the end of the fifth chapter. As I said, my father gave two Key of David programs on Steve Jobs, or using him as an example, the one on focus that I just played a bit from. But then he also gave one a few years earlier on the subject of perfection, and my father touched on that in that same program from 2 years ago. Here's clip number two.
He had a real desire for perfection, and that's a good subject to get into as well. It takes focus to do that, of course, but he was perfecting computers, and he changed the computing world. He changed the world and world's technology in so many ways and moved this world forward in technology. So there is a physical way to focus, but there also is a spiritual focus that we need.
And that's the main point my father makes from that program 2 years ago. The right spiritual focus, built upon verses like Matthew 5:48, which says, "Become you therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect." I mean, that's going to take some concentration and focus. You've got to really zero in on big goals and have some kind of command of your mind for God to be able to use you effectively. I mean, we are, I think it's in the Biblical Manhood book on our website, Joel Hilliker. He makes the point how that we don't often think of ourselves as officials or authorities or commissioned officers when we get out of bed, but when you think about the commander over your mind, I mean, you have to take charge. You have to take action this day. That's who we are. And when you add to that the potential that we have to be kings and priests for God, to be leaders and teachers in the world of tomorrow. I mean, think about the importance of this, not just with respect to our future, but just with respect to our day-to-day activities and responsibilities. How effective would our prayer session be without the ability to focus and concentrate? How effective would our Bible study session be? Or just reading history, as we've stressed in recent weeks, if you can't focus on what you're reading and studying? How many times has that happened? You get to the end of a paragraph and you have to go back and read it again because your mind was somewhere else. You didn't have the focus. What if young people did that at school? A lot of them do. Or in working on their term papers, or at work, their work assignments, or with recreational hobbies, productive ones, as I covered the other week. How are we going to take it seriously and actually develop a skill if we can't focus? In The Art of Thinking, Ernest Dimne makes the point that if you have a strong interest, that's going to help your concentration and your focus. If you develop a love for something, and this is what Steve Jobs stressed in his famous commencement address at Stanford back in 2005. My father actually quoted from some of this in his 2016 program. But let me give it to you from Steve Jobs directly. This is from his 2005 commencement address at Stanford, clip 3.
Sometimes life's going to hit you in the head with a brick. Don't lose faith. I'm convinced that the only thing that kept me going was that I loved what I did. You've got to find what you love.
That's Steve Jobs from 2005 talking about when he was fired from Apple. I think that was when he was around 30 years of age. And it would have been easy to throw in the towel and to say, well, what's the point? Why should I keep going? What kept him going was that he loved what he did. He wasn't going to turn and walk away from what he loved. And so he kept working. He kept creating. He kept producing. And not everything he produced was, you know, a runaway hit, but a lot of what he produced was. How important is this concept with respect to spiritual focus? He went on to say in that same commencement, clip 4.
And the only way to do great work is to love what you do. If you haven't found it yet, keep looking and don't settle. As with all matters of the heart, you'll know when you find it. And like any great relationship, it just gets better and better as the years roll on. So keep looking. Don't settle.
Keep going. Keep on going. And if you want to produce great work, make sure that you really love what you're doing. My father made the point in 2016, when you look at the Laodiceans in these last days and how so many of them have lost God's love. They didn't love the truth. They lost interest in striving for perfection. Become you therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. I mean, God is love. And if the love of God dwells in us, that's going to give us some kind of passion, a deep and abiding love. And then, like Dimne says in his book, if you really love it, if you really have an interest in it, then that's just going to produce concentration and focus naturally. You'll still have to push yourself. But it makes sense, doesn't it, that we just naturally concentrate on what we like or enjoy. If you're immersed into God's work, God's truth, God's way of life, if you love it, then you're going to be able to concentrate on it and focus on it. Here's that point that my father made in 2016, clip 5.
Now God says of his own people in this end time that 95% of them don't love his truth. And so they've lost their focus because of it. And they're going to be, well, great failures at best. And some of them are going to, at least 50% of them are going to repent of that, but many of them do not.
A lot of them won't, because they lost their focus. Focus is as he said in the article accompanying that program, focus is the foundational tool for success. But look at how few people possess it. Look at how few people possess this ultimate success focus, as he called it. Matthew 6, a chapter over, in verse 22, it says here, the light of the body is the eye. If therefore your eye be single, your whole body shall be full of light. If our minds are focused right, then our whole lives are going to light up in this singleness or simplicity of Christ, as Paul said in 2 Corinthians 11. And at the same time, as verse 23 brings out, I mean, if your mind's eye is evil, then your whole body, your whole life is going to be filled with darkness. Here's how my father put it in that 2016 show, clip 6.
So if your eye is single, it's going to just fill your body with light. You're going to see everything so clearly if you focus and focus, especially in the right place spiritually.
If you focus in the right place, then you really can see. And what does God say, too, in Revelation 3 about the Laodiceans? They're blind. So they're not focused on the things of God, and they don't see. In the last segment, we read that verse in Jeremiah 1. Jeremiah, what do you see? What do you see happening in Europe? Well, I see a boiling pot. Do you see a boiling pot? Do you see a seething pot? You should see it. With all the literature that we've produced, with all the instruction that God is giving us, if our focus is on that, we will see a lot. Verse 24, staying here in Matthew 6, it says, no man can serve two masters, for either he will hate the one and love the other, or else he will hold to the one and despise the other. You can't serve God and mammon. You can't serve God and material things. It's one or the other. That means if we're serving God, we've got to do it with a sharp focus. We can't have our attention divided or distracted. God is very much concerned about where and how we focus. I mean, what are we focused on and how are we doing with it? How much can we stay with it? How agitated do we get when we're interrupted? I mean, agitated in a good way, I guess. We all face a lot of interruptions day in and day out. But there are times for, you know, putting up the do not disturb and then getting busy, focusing. My father wrote, proper focus requires not only concentration on one clear goal, but also the right goal or purpose, or rather the right goal to pursue, sorry. There are a multitude of areas where we can direct our focus, but certain areas are far more important than others. Some areas are good and others are evil. I mean, and Jesus gives us a lot to think on and to focus on here in Matthew 5 and 6, and Matthew 7 as well. These are three packed chapters. Just hold your place there in Matthew 6. We'll come back and conclude the segment with a verse at the end of that chapter in a moment. But look at what Paul says over in 2 Corinthians chapter 10, a couple of verses here, just in applying this same principle to removing the sin from our lives, really focusing in on getting the sin out. 2 Corinthians 10 and verse 4, it says, for the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. So the fight, the battle that we have, it's a spiritual war, and we need spiritual weapons to pull down these strongholds. And where are these strongholds? They're in our minds. Strongholds is also called vain imaginations. These things that just lead to death. Paul addresses that in Romans chapter 1, the vain imaginations, the foolish heart of man, because when we knew God, we didn't glorify Him as God, and we weren't thankful. Well, staying here in 2 Corinthians 10, it says in verse 5, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. Here again, the battlefield is in our minds. We've got to rule our own mind, our own spirit, and we've got to win battles daily. And to do that, we've got to recognize the enemy. And then focus our attention on and overwhelming him. That's what my father brings out in the Science of Spiritual Warfare, the Overcomer booklet. I mean, when you have a problem to tackle, concentrate everything you have on that problem. You've got to concentrate and focus on that problem. It says, bring everything possible to bear on solving it. Do you lay siege to your big problems? A siege is a military blockade of a city or a fortified place intended to compel it to surrender. It's a persistent attack. To lay siege means to pursue diligently or persistently. How about preparing a siege against your laziness? Or these many problems, just to add more to the list here, like we read. All of the media, consuming media and entertainment, how about laying siege to that problem, or to lust, or a sense of inferiority, or vanity, or whatever problem we face? Lay siege to it, he says. Go after it. Destroy its will. Decimate that old man. Well, let's switch back to this more positive-oriented focus here in Matthew 6. As I said, this is a lot of valuable instruction coming from Jesus Christ. We read about making sure that the mind is single, or that the mind is focused. And then it talks about not putting our hearts into just pursuing after physical or material things. God knows that we have certain needs. God wants to provide those needs. But look at what Jesus says in Matthew 6 and verse 33. It says, but seek you first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. Listen to what my father had to say about that verse, clip 7.
Isn't that amazing? That's just a dynamically amazing verse. Seek first, focus first on the kingdom of God. And God says, if you do that, I'll give you all these things you want. I'll give you the wealth. I'll give you the treasures. It'll be added if you'll just focus first on the kingdom of God.
It's like we get the cake and we get to eat it too. If we put the focus on the kingdom and God's righteousness, if we focus on that first every day, then God will add all of the treasures of this world as well. He'll provide. He goes on and says in verse 34, take no thought for the morrow shall take thought for the things of itself. Sufficient unto the day is the evil thereof. I mean, put the focus on what you need to do today spiritually, and keep the focus. Keep it laser-like, as my father wrote back in 2016. Make sure that it's sharply focused on the target. And then God will add to it if we focus first on the kingdom. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program, as I said, with the world premiere clip from Undefeated. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email the program at td@kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. Don't forget to visit our website at thetrumpet.com. Every day, thetrumpet.com will help you understand your world by analyzing today's headlines under the clear light of Bible prophecy. Log on to thetrumpet.com and sign up for our daily Trumpet Brief email and subscribe to The Trumpet Magazine. This is KPCG-FM, and this is The Trumpet Daily.
Just a couple of emails here that I think we can squeeze in before we conclude with a clip from Undefeated, the new musical that plays at Armstrong Auditorium on August 12th. This one here says, I much enjoyed your brilliant online piece on the life of Winston Churchill, touching as you did on his school days at Harrow. What a wonderful God-inspired man must have been his remedial teacher, Robert Somerville, and indeed Churchill himself. I read your father's book on Churchill, The Watchman, and not only liked it immensely, but learned much from it. I shall be as advised to obtain William Manchester's three-volume biography on Churchill, and also some of Churchill's own writings. So there's someone who's fired up to do additional study. And then this one here comes in response to Richard's show on Tuesday. It says, hats off to Richard Palmer for an extraordinary program on Germany and Russia on Tuesday. So detailed and so timely. great job showing us how important history is and how short time is. And this is not his dad, it says. You've trained Richard well, so a compliment from me and Richard together, and he assures me it is not from your father. All right, that's all that we have time for today if we're going to squeeze in this four-minute clip. This is the song Travail, a beautiful song with quite a few singers in them. I won't name them all off because I'll surely miss one or two of them if I did. But it's the song Travail, and it comes from the new musical Undefeated, which premieres on Armstrong Auditorium Sunday afternoon, August the 12th. So we'll conclude today's show with Travail.
Go to Isaiah. We must seek his counsel and support. For the children have come to the to faint in her great distress.